The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Our guest today is an internet and media entrepreneur who has taken five companies from startup to IPO. His net wealth is estimated to be almost 2 billion ringgit, and he's also recognized in the Forbes 2016 annual list of 50 richest Malaysians. He's only 42 and a self-made billionaire. Good morning, I'm Brian Fernandez, and with me on The Breakfast Grill is Patrick Grove, co-founder and CEO of Catcher Group. Patrick is here to tell us more about his latest ventures and what he looks for in his investments and where the opportunities are in the digital space. Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, Patrick.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Patrick, you were last on the grill in July 2013, and since then, you have exited and pivoted from a number of businesses such as iProperty. You have grown your personal wealth tremendously, but you have also experienced some setbacks with Ensongo. Give us a quick perspective on the Patrick Grove ecosystem of companies and investments.
It's a good question. When you're a serial entrepreneur and you start a company on average once a year, and you've been in this business for about 15, 16 years, then you know you would have 15 to 16 companies in your portfolio. But I've been a little bit slow, so I've only been averaging about a company every 2 years. But so what's in our portfolio today is we have a company called iFlix, which is one of the fastest growing online on-demand entertainment platforms in the emerging world. We have a huge project, which we're really honored to be part of, called Kuala Lumpur Internet City. And that's where we're building a city from scratch, specifically designed for internet companies, both small, medium, and large. We have a company called Frontier Digital Ventures, which specializes in backing the top internet entrepreneurs in all of the frontier markets. So when people ask, what is a frontier market? You know, you'll be surprised that Malaysia is actually so far ahead in its development that it's no longer considered a frontier market. Frontier market would be countries where GDP per capita per annum is under 5,000 US dollars a year. So that would be countries like Myanmar, Pakistan, you know, Iran, Nigeria, Tanzania, Costa Rica, so on and so forth. We have another company called iCar, which is one of the largest network of car portals in Southeast Asia. We have a co-working space called Common Ground that we launched earlier this year, which is growing tremendously fast. We've got two more companies still under wraps that are currently being built right now and be launched in the next 6 months. And look, you're right. It's time flies. I feel like it was only yesterday that we met when you corrected me earlier that it's been 4 years and a lot has happened, not only for Catcher, but also for the tech scene.
Now, let's start with the KL Internet City. Now, that's part of the Digital Free Trade Zone launched by the PM and Jack Ma in March 2017. But interestingly enough, I understand that original idea came from you after a fireside chat with the Prime Minister. So it's essentially your idea. It's a private sector-driven initiative. Could you share with us how the idea was germinated and what's the overall value proposition?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the idea for the Digital Free Trade Zone came out when our Prime Minister Najib came to Wild Digital, which is a tech conference that we organize every year. And after the conference, I think it was the first time he really realized how significant the tech scene was in Malaysia. And you know, that it was buzzing, it was growing, and you know, and there was a lot of smart, talented people who wanted more. And so he pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, Patrick, what more can the government do to support the scene?" And I was like, "Do you really want to know?" And he goes, "Yeah, I really do want to know." And I said, "Okay, well, then if you can give me 30 minutes of your time, let me prepare, and I'll tell you all the things that the government can do more." And so together with Dato Yasmin, who's the CEO of MDEC, we collectively presented to the PM and his team a number of ideas, and one of them was for Malaysia to launch the world's first digital free trade zone. And, you know, which is amazing because there are a lot of free trade zones globally, but no one's ever thought of a free trade zone from an internet or digital point of view. And when we shared that with the PM and his team, you know, to his credit and to their credit, they really jumped on the idea. They loved it. They ran with it. They happened to be in China about a month later, and I think they remember them saying, who would be the best partner for this project globally? And I think we said, look, if you can get Alibaba and Jack Ma to be one of the anchor partners of the Digital Free Trade Zone, you know, this would be something absolutely amazing.
So the PM literally made it happen. You set the roadmap and he made it happen.
He made it happen. You know, it, honestly, from a catch-up point of view, we just really presented the idea, presented how it is and how it would work. You know, we presented the PM, we presented to a number of other ministers in his team, and to his credit, you know, he made the idea bigger than it is. You know, we really were just going to build a digital free trade zone with the Malaysian companies and Southeast Asian companies, and he had a China visit, and together with MDEC, they saw an opportunity to present to Jack Ma. They made the meeting happen. They said, Jack, we want to launch a digital free trade zone. And I think Jack said something like, hey, you know what? So do I. I've been looking for a government that's forward-thinking and that can move fast to do this. And, you know, I think that's when our government put up its hand and said, look, we can move fast. And to their credit, they did. The initial idea was presented to the PM, I think, in August of last year. The meeting with Jack happened in October. And the Digital Free Trade Zone was formally launched on March of this year.
And so really, for the tech ecosystem, if you could give a few bullet points in terms of what would be the key benefits to the tech ecosystem and to Malaysia.
Okay, so Digital Free Trade Zone has two components. There is the Digital Free Trade Zone where there's actual e-commerce trade, and then there's Kuala Lumpur Internet City. So the first part, which is where the government is working very, very closely with Alibaba, is I'll give you the snapshot of a typical SME in Malaysia who wants to go online. And there was a great example that the PM used of someone who has Malaysia's best kueh lapis, you know, like the little cake. If you want to sell that cake to someone in Singapore, but you want to wrap it in a nice customized packaging and box that was made in China, you pay tax twice. You pay tax when you bring in the packaging from China, then you stick the kueh lapis in the packaging, and then you pay tax again in Singapore when you send the goods out. And so we had this situation in Malaysia, and particularly in Southeast Asia, where if you wanted to build a regional e-commerce business, it was very frustrating and incredibly inconvenient, the amount of layers of bureaucracy you had to deal with, shipping, importing, paying tax. Like, it just got to the point where, you know, if you wanted to build a regional e-commerce business from Malaysia and you were importing goods and then re-exporting them after you'd added things and changed them a little bit, it just made it really hard. And when you looked at the situation, there was no way ever that Malaysia would ever be a strong contender to build a great e-commerce hub in Southeast Asia. And so when we presented this, we said, look, you've got to build a digital free trade zone. You've got to let e-commerce come in and out tax-free. And to their credit, this government put their hand up and said, yeah, you know what? Every country in the region has the same problem. We're going to be the first country to fix this problem. And I'm proud to say the Digital Free Trade Zone as a concept was announced in March this year. And as a reality, it will be finally launched. There will be special guests from China together with the PM and all of us. And the Digital Free Trade Zone will be formally launched.
Moving on to Rev Asia, you just sold the business earlier this year to Media Prima for $105 million. The listed entity is now looking for a new business. There's rumors in the market that Common Ground would be injected into this listed entity. What's your plans for Rev Asia?
Wow, you do really good research. You know, correct. So, you know, we are the major shareholder of a company called Rev Asia Berhad, which is a listed shell on Bursa. It's now in GN2 status, which means that we need to find a core business. So we are actively seeking a digital business to inject into that asset. You know, it's a little bit tricky when you're in GN2 because when you inject an asset, it's almost like conducting a whole new IPO. You need a prospectus. You need to work very closely with Bursa and the Securities Commission. So we are right now exploring a number of possibilities for Rev Asia. You know, that includes, can we find a way for the Kuala Lumpur Internet City project to be injected into Rev? You know, Common Ground is another one where we're saying, you know, is there a way that we can inject that company, which is profitable and highly successful and growing really fast? Can there be a way to make it a public company? So look, at this stage, and, you know, what has been publicly shared is that Rev Asia Berhad is actively looking for digital companies to be injected into the company so that we can rebuild those companies as a public company using Rev as the vehicle. We haven't confirmed what company will be injected, but look, We are definitely working hard on it, and it'll definitely happen within the next 6 months.
I just interviewed on the Breakfast Grill Jason Portnoy, who is a PayPal mafia, and what he said was that the gap between the Silicon Valley and Southeast Asia, from a brains, from an ideas perspective, essentially has narrowed. What is your view on that?
Well, I'm really honored that he'd say that, because I guess we, you know, Catcher and our teams and the great people we work with have been part of closing that knowledge gap. And it's good as bad. It's great that we're no longer a second tier market that just copies ideas shamelessly from the West. You know, we're now catching up. A good example, when I first started as an internet entrepreneur, if you saw a great idea work in the West, it would normally be anywhere from 1 to 5 years before someone launched that idea in Southeast Asia. So you had 1 to 5 years to identify a great business model, learn everything you could about it, and then go and build that business model in Southeast Asia. Now, the idea arbitrage execution kind of window has now narrowed to about 2 months. So if you see a great idea in America and you go, oh, someone's built a great app to sell sneakers on a sneaker stock exchange, of which there is a real app, guarantee you someone in Southeast Asia is already thinking right now on how can they copy it, localize it, build it in Indonesia, and launch it in Vietnam, and so on and so forth. So that window that you had has shortened considerably. And then people say, well, why has it shortened? Because the entrepreneurs in Southeast Asia, there's more of them, they're getting better, and they're more well-funded.
I'm Brian Fernandez, and I'm speaking to Patrick Grove, co-founder and group CEO of Catcher Group. After this, Patrick will share his insight on his Unsongo venture that went belly up, and also his potential IPO unicorn, iFlix. Stay with us on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are with Patrick Grove, co-founder and group CEO of the Catcher Group. Patrick, the deals, e-commerce business, and Sogo was a blot in your copybook. In June 21st, 2016, and Sogo announced that it shut all its Southeast Asian operations while it was listed on the ASX. What happened there?
So I think, you know, we were one of the co-founders of that business, and that business successfully IPO'd. And then I think at the point in time, we probably only owned about 10 or 11% of the business. And it got to the point where building an e-commerce business at scale across multiple markets is a game where you either have $1 billion or you don't. And if you have anything less than $1 billion, it just makes it really, really hard to build a business at scale across multiple markets. And I think it was, you know, we got to that point where the board realized that, look, we weren't going to get $1 billion in funding, and you know, what did we and what did we have to do? So with, you know, with the remaining funding that the company had about $10 million in funding, and you know, the directors of that company made the decision to say, you know what, this is unsustainable. We're not bankrupt today, and we're not going bust today, but there's no way that the company is going to be able to grow and sustain the losses that it has. So, you know, we made a very, very, I'm one of six directors of that company at the time, and we made a very, very tough decision to say the only way to deal with this is to shut the company down today and move on and shut down the company in a graceful manner rather than in a disgraceful manner when you have no money to settle creditors and you have no money to settle customers. So in the end, you know, everything, administrators were appointed, everything was settled or will be settled amicably. I think one of the things, when I look back in that experience and reflect, you know, it was a really tough situation because, you know, we've now been involved in 8 or 9 companies and we'd never had a company shut down. And I was really reflecting on, like, kind of what, you know, what happened? Why did that one particular company not work? And I remember reading a great saying from Richard Branson, and who had started 300 companies, and something like, I remember reading that only 30 of his companies actually survived and became credible, whereas 270 companies that he started, you know, they had like Virgin wedding dresses, Virgin candles. No one's even heard of these companies, Virgin Cola, you know, because they didn't work. And I think he had a great quote that says, if a few things don't break along the way, it means you're not trying hard enough. And you know, it was really reassuring because it meant that that something didn't work, and it did show that not every venture you do works, and you're not always right, but it also was okay because you learn a lot from it. And it's not just me who got learnings. It was all the other investors, all the other co-founders, all the other directors, all the other employees across the region. And I think everyone learned great lessons on how to build an e-commerce business and how not to build an e-commerce business. And some of those people have now since gone on and built very successful businesses with the learnings from that particular experience. So I think I would say to anyone who's been involved in a venture that didn't go to plan, I would say, you know what, it's fine. Don't beat yourself up about it. And that, you know, if you don't have a few bumps or mistakes along the way, it just means you're not pushing yourself hard enough.
Let's talk about something that looks like it's going to be your biggest winner so far, iFlix. Now, in only 2 years, iFlix has grown to 19 countries. You're around 5 million paying customers. Mm. Annual revenues, $100 million. Your most recent raise is $133 million. And you've raised, in the last 2 years, over $300 million, giving you a valuation of something in the region of $700+. What's your endgame strategy for iFlix? Is this another grow and flip Patrick Grove company?
So, I mean, so just to clarify, we never build a business to flip. You know, we, like I said, we've IPO'd five companies, and we have been the major shareholder of all of those companies. And we've never sold any shares on the IPO. We IPO to build and grow companies. In relation to iFlix, it is, you know, it's funny, when you've built 7, 8, or 9 businesses in the digital space, you think you've seen everything, and you think you can build anything. And when we got involved with iFlix, man, it's been such a tough journey. It's been an incredible journey.
Why? What were the key differences from, say, some of your other ventures that made it tough?
Yeah, I think what it was is that a couple things. I think number one is that to build a content business is an expensive business because you've got to spend a lot of money on your infrastructure and your platform and your content, even if you have zero customers. Whereas
yeah,
if you want,
that's a fixed cost.
Correct, right? So on day one, you have to spend all that money, even though you don't have any customers. Whereas let's say you want to build a retail empire with 200 shops. You don't open 200 shops on day one. You open shop one. If it works, you open shop two. If it works, it opens shop three. Whereas, you know, if you're building a content business, you got to give it everything you got on day one. So it's very expensive. And then you're either really smart or really stupid, where someone in the plan, you say, hey, you know what, let's launch 30 countries within the first 24 months, because that means that in 30 countries, we have to have fully funded expenses on platform, marketing, headcount, and content in all those markets. Whereas we might only have one customer or two customers or a million customers, you just don't know. But it's equivalent like you got to open 100 shops in each country on day one, whether or not you even know the first shop works or whether or even not you know the product is something that people want to buy. So that's tough. Sometimes it's just tough getting your head around which countries have opened which week and what day and what, you know, and so on and so forth. I think what it was is that, why did we do it? Two reasons. One, that we felt that when I look back at the opportunities between iProperty and some of the other companies that we'd built, I'd always noticed this trend that great ideas would come from the West first. They would then come to Southeast Asia 2 years later. And then 2 years after that, they would go to the Middle East. And then say 2 years after that, they would go to Africa. When I realized this trend, I also realized that no one in Southeast Asia had built a great digital business outside of Southeast Asia. You know, you have a lot of entrepreneurs who built great Indonesian businesses. You have a lot of entrepreneurs like Anthony Tan from Grab who built a great regional business. You have a lot of great entrepreneurs in the Philippines and Thailand who only built domestic business. It's very rare for someone to build a regional business which is more than just ASEAN. And so it was one of those things where we really wanted to build a global business, and we felt that for a long, long time that people kept assuming that only Silicon Valley companies could build great regional businesses or great global businesses. They felt that someone in Malaysia will just build a Malaysian business, someone in Thailand will just build a Thai business, but all these great people from Silicon Valley can build global businesses. And I kept wondering, why can't people from Malaysia build a global business? And back to your point earlier, when you said that the execution gap is closing, it used to take 2 years for someone in Southeast Asia to build a great Western business. Now it's taken 2 months. So that means that we're getting better and better and better at building tech companies. So I then thought, well, if we're getting better and better at building tech companies, why can't we build a great tech business in the Middle East, which is meant to be 2 years behind Southeast Asia? Why can't we build a great company in Africa? And with the iFlix experience and with another company that we have called Frontier Digital.
Frontier Ventures, and let's talk about that as well. Yeah.
We wanted to prove that, and this was more so to the other tech entrepreneurs in Southeast Asia, that stop thinking about one country or stop thinking about just Southeast Asia. If you really want to build something great, build a regional business from Southeast Asia.
And Patrick, your Frontier Ventures business is essentially following your playbook, classifieds, cars, and property. Correct.
Yeah. So when we saw the learnings that we had from iProperty and iCar, which were Southeast Asian only businesses, we said, well, you know what? We now know how to build an online property portal in the emerging world better than anyone else in the world. There's great people who know how to build property portals for the developed world, for the Western world, but they don't know how to build it for the emerging world. And so our team in Malaysia ended up knowing more about this than any other group in the world. So we thought, since we know more about it than anyone else, and we have the capital for it, and we have, I guess, the confidence to get on a plane and do it, let's go and do it. And so I'm proud to say that, you know, Frontier Digital Ventures now owns the market-leading property and car portals in great markets like Pakistan, Philippines, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Tanzania, Myanmar, Iran, Morocco. Man, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't even been to most of these companies, but our teams have. And I'm so proud to say that a Malaysian company is at the forefront of the property portal revolution in 20 countries around the world.
Patrick, I got to ask you about Patrick Grove, the entrepreneur. Now, you pay your people quite well, but critics have mentioned that you've not shared the wealth quite so much beyond your inner circle. So unlike the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs who basically made their employees very, very rich, essentially you've become a billionaire, but your employees have not. What do you respond to that criticism?
So, you know, I've never heard that feedback before, and I'd love to meet that person head on and show them the data. We actually crunched the data the other day, and across the Catcha portfolio of companies, we've created about 30 US dollar millionaires in the last 10 years. And it could be from iProperty, it could be from iCar, it could be from Frontier, it could be from anything else. And, you know, and I think that's a great thing. I think it's a beautiful thing that someone can join us, and they don't necessarily have to be the entrepreneur or the funder of the business, but they could have been the CEO, the CFO, they could have been a co-founder or a country head. And they've had the opportunity to make over $1 million. And I think there's a great family out there of people who are very, very thankful of being part of the journey in any of the particular Catcha companies that they're part of.
So last question, Patrick. Where are the opportunities now moving forward?
Okay, so there are so many digital opportunities. Like, I can't even sleep at night trying to comprehend which ones to prioritize.
Let's say top three or four.
Okay, number one, e-commerce. The digital free trade zone is freaking amazing. I mean, what this government has done is just incredible. It's a game changer. So if you want to be, if you want to build a regional e-commerce business, this is the place to do it. Number two, anything to do with mobile. Southeast Asia now has more smartphones than America. Let me say that again. Southeast Asia has more smartphones than America. So what that means is that if you build a company like Grab or like iFlix or so on and so forth, you can now make a company bigger than any company in America because we have more users in this part of the world. So whatever your idea is, and if the mobile phone or the smartphone is the center of gravity for your idea, you have the opportunity to reach 350 million people within seconds that live in Southeast Asia. And that has got to be one of the greatest opportunities ever.
Thank you for your time and your insights, Patrick. It was a pleasure having you again on The Breakfast Grill. That was Patrick Grove, co-founder and group CEO of the Catcha Group. And you've been listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U-Mobile, where data hearts you.